The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, episode 548, take 3, for Sunday, April 12th, 2015.
Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab, the show where you send in questions, tips, and cool stuff found. We answer your questions, we share your tips, and we share your cool stuff found, which is actually what we're going to be doing next week, so make sure you get those in. Our sponsors for this episode include Gazelle at gazelle.com, the place where you can sell and buy used Apple iOS and Mac laptop devices. We'll tell you more about that during the show, easy for me to say. Also, Lynda at lynda.com/mgg, where you can get 10 days free of their excellent training videos, access to all of it. We will talk more about that during the show here in sunny as we talk, Las Vegas, Nevada. I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here, still in Fairfield, Connecticut, John F. Braun.
We've crossed time zones, John. It's earlier for me than it is for you today.
No, it's not. It's the same time.
Oh, what? I am out here for, well, for two shows, NAB, the National Association of Broadcasters, and also NMX, which is the first show is one I've never been to before, NAB. But this year, they decided to have these two shows happen together, and NMX is the evolution of what started as Blog World Expo and then acquired and merged with the Podcast and New Media Expo and became Blog World and New Media Expo, and then became, I think, just New Media Expo maybe in the middle there for 1 year, and now they've simply shortened it to NMX. And the podcasting track this year here, which also includes the podcast awards and all sorts of other great things, looks pretty good. I'm pretty excited about what this show has to offer. So I'll, of course, report back when I get back next week. But yeah, pretty stoked about it this year. I'm glad to be here. So that's what's going on with me. And of course, this is show take 3 because we're doing it on the road, and take 2 never works, as we've always learned. Right?
Okay.
How you doing,
John? It's a hard and fast rule, but
it's true more often than it's not, I think. It doesn't matter, John. How was your week? You went to a show and collected some cool stuff found of your own, right? Cool stuff found in progress.
No, it actually got mailed to me. So no, I did go. They had so the first show of the season, first Pepcom show. Saw some interesting things. You know, kept you know, saw some vendors like Gazelle. I saw Gazelle there. That was nice.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I'll have to dig through my pile of goodies. Nothing earth-shattering that's Mac-specific, but a lot of interesting things in like the connected home area, which we may talk about more in the future.
Yep.
I'm starting to get into that, and I think you are as well. So, but yeah, trade show season has obviously started for both of us now.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to a Showstoppers event this afternoon, and I always like those. In fact, I changed my flights. I paid the exorbitant change fees to make sure I made it to Showstoppers. Those are always excellent shows. So yeah, we'll collect some cool stuff found. We'll talk about that next week. For today, though, John, why don't you kick us off here, if you would please, with this week 10.10.3 came out, and along with it, the Photos app from Apple made its release debut. Of course, it was relatively easily available in public beta for a while, but now it's official. It's out. So for those migrating from one Apple solution, either iPhoto or Aperture, to Photos, you found some interesting things this week, John, didn't you?
Well, a few interesting things. So one, of course, you can see the update. You know, it came up in the App Store. You know, if you go to the App Store and then you look at the update tab, it'll tell you that there were updates, and they got the word out that it was going to, you know, come out several days ago, and everybody was waiting with bated breath. And actually, the you know, downloading it wasn't that bad an experience. The one fishache that I have is that they still don't reliably link to the standalone version Dave, but actually I think I learned a trick from one of my followers. I can't remember who exactly, because he posted the link to the standalone downloader, which a lot of times you get better throughput because everybody's dogpiling using the App Store. Now, where, may you ask, will you see Apple software updates? And you go to support.apple.com/downloads, and they all appear there. And the trick that I was given was, so the Yosemite ones are there. And if you look at them, they have, like most of the article, they have a little code for, you know, so it's support.apple.com/KB/, and then some 2-letter, 4-number code. And someone found it before it was posted. And I'm like, how'd you find it? And he's like, well, you know, the numbers kind of go in series. So so one is DL1804, and I think the other one is DL1805. So I would imagine the next major one is going to be DL1806. So that's a little trick for people if they do want to get to the direct download page for the updates before Apple links to it. So the thing with 10.3, I mean, there's a lot, you know, they fix a lot of things in 10.3, but the big thing is the official release of Photos. And I just wanted to point to one thing here. So I dove in, and I'm starting to look at Photos, but I'm looking at it in parallel. What do I mean by that? So the thing is, when you open Photos, it at some point it's going to say to you, which library would you like to migrate over? And in my case, I have a small iPhoto library, just, you know, for support's sake, but I don't really use it. And all of my stuff is in Aperture. So I said, okay, you know, take that Aperture library and you know, migrate all the stuff that's in there over to Photos. And it took a good long time. I think I went out, you know, did some shopping and stuff and came back. So yeah, it'll take a while if you have, I think I have 150 gigabytes of Photos from over a decade. And here's the interesting thing, though. And I think the best thing that explains it, so it's funny, is after the migration occurred, Dave, I'm like, oh man, you know, let me check my hard drive space. And I looked at my hard drive space and it did not decrease. How is that possible, you ask?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, see, I haven't done that migration that way yet. So it's just pointing to the other copy of Photos. That's really smart.
Right. So the thing is, you still have two standalone library files. So after the migration is complete, you will still have your Aperture library file, but you also have a Photos library.
Does it give you a warning not to delete your old Aperture library file?
No, because you don't need it. It's not necessary.
Isn't necessary?
Correct.
Are they doing, as far as I can, are they tell, using now, hard links between the two? So if you delete one,
you beat me.
The yes, file stays? Okay. Too. Well, I mean, that's how a Time Machine works, right? It's the same general
Correct.
Concept. Okay. Hey, that's really smart.
So there's
sort
a swell
of.
Article.
So it's sort so it, of smart.
Right. So the article that tells you about this, so our friend Jason Snell and friends at Six Colors actually did a little article, which we'll link to, but the title of the article is The Hard Link Between Photos and iPhoto. And yeah, that's exactly what they do. Yeah, you pointed out correctly. So it doesn't take up any additional physical space, in that you won't lose, like I didn't lose 150 gigs. It kind of looks like you did, because again, then you'll see two libraries that they're, you know, the same size, and it's like, how is this possible?
Right.
Now, what happens if you want to then use Photos, but you want to continue to use Aperture? And this is what I thought was interesting. I want to tell people about this.
Let me point something out, though. It's great that Apple's doing it this way, because the obvious benefit is you basically have the files in two places without having two copies of them. And really what it is it's the way a real hard link works is there's two directory entries that point to exactly the same file. It's not an alias. An alias points to another directory entry. A hard link points to the actual location of the file, and it's just a duplicate directory entry. This is probably, it's not exactly correct, but that's a good way to think about it. And when you remove one, the disk doesn't show that space is available because something else is pointing to it. The only problem is, as has been explained to me by folks at Apple that work on the file systems there, is that HFS Plus does not actually support hard links. Hard links were a bolt-on to the file system so that it could support the construct, because it's normally a it's a normal thing in most Unix file systems. So they bolted it on, but it's actually stored, everything is stored in a text file. So, or something akin to a text file. So it's entirely possible for this to completely crater and have a huge problem. But it, surprisingly, we have seen very little of that, even with Time Machine, which uses it wild, way more than Photos and all that stuff are ever going to. So, but it shouldn't matter. To answer your question, John, right? Does it, if you add a file, it doesn't matter, right?
Well, no. Well, here's... I'll just read you the dialogue that they present to you.
Okay, so all right, even better.
Once you do the migration, the two are independent. They're related, but they're independent from that point forward. And they warn you about this, because if you then, and I'm going to be doing this, so my experiment is that I'm going to be trying to import a few libraries and all that into both environments to see how the experience compares, right? So that's what I'm going to do. You know, and if I don't like Photos, I can get rid of it and still have, you know, have my old data there. But it warns you, because once you've done the migration and you try to open your Aperture library again, it says the content of this Aperture library already has been migrated to the Photos app. The library can be opened in Aperture, but any changes, including importing new photos, will not appear in Photos library. So I'm just glad that they tell you that, and then you get three choices. You get open Photos, open library in Aperture, or quit.
Oh, that makes sense. Sure. Yeah.
Just want to give people a heads up that if you do the migration and then you want to use both libraries, it's going to be separate. And that the changes will not, from that point forward, as they're saying, the changes will not, you're taking two separate paths. And I just want to make people aware of that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That makes sense, because migration, which is probably a better term than an import, right? The migration is creating all these hard links once, but it's not constantly updating itself.
Correct.
Nor would you. I mean, that would be a bear for anything automated to manage. So, yeah, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
Hey, that's awesome.
The only thing I'm going to say is when you first open Photos, and I got a fish shake at Apple because they pulled the same thing with iTunes in the past, Dave. Is when you first open Photos, you're probably going to be totally lost, because you have no context of what you're looking at. So one tip for people, go to the View menu and say Show Sidebar. You will feel much, much better, because you're going to see all of the things that you saw in the Aperture sidebar. If you choose to display things like that, which I think most people do, and it'll show you your albums and your projects and all the stuff that migrated over, and then you'll get a warm fuzzy that things are not that different. Otherwise, it kind of throws you for a loop. Because you're like, where am I? What do I do to navigate? So
that makes sense. Yeah, totally. That's pretty cool, man. Pretty good.
So, I mean, for the most part now, you know, we'll see. I'll continue to give feedback. I mean, I'm not a big, you know, heavy photo workflow type of guy here. I just use it to organize my photos and do some minor touch-up. And I think from what I've heard from most people, Photos will be fine for that. But if you're in the heavy duty workflow or doing lots of modifications and sorting and tagging and stuff like that, it may not be for you, but I'll see.
Cool. Well, that's awesome, man. Nice find. Good digging. Oh, that's great. Hey, I want to talk about Gazelle at gazelle.com. Gazelle, they've been sponsors for a long time, so those of you that know Mac Geekab and have been listening for a while know about Gazelle. But I want to tell you anyway, because there's some different things that they do now. We all know Gazelle, most of us anyway, know Gazelle as the company that will buy back your electronics and make the process super easy. And it's really a fantastic service that they offer, because what you do is you visit their website and you immediately start narrowing down what your product is, right? You start saying, okay, well, is it an iPhone? Is it an iPad? Is it a laptop? And then ask me about the specs, right? You know, how much storage does it have? What condition is it in? What model is it, right? All of that stuff. And then they give you a price. And if you like the price, then they give you a label and optionally even ship you a box. All of this is on their dime, right? The label, everything. And And so you ship your device to them. And it, the boxes come with perfect packaging and everything. You don't have to stress about how am I going to, you know, do this where it's going to be safe in shipping and all of that stuff. Well, then you ship it off to them. They open the box. They make sure that what's in there is what you said was going to be in there. And they send you your money. It's that simple. No money leaves your hands, not even for, you know, a nominal shipping charge. They cover all of it. And they make it really easy. And they give you a, they give you some time, usually at least 30 days, right? So you go today, you lock in your price. Your price doesn't change as long as what you send them is what you said you were going to send them. And the condition hasn't changed or anything like that. And then you got 30 days to make up your mind and ship it off to them, or maybe get your data off it and all of that. So it makes perfect sense. If you've got something that you think you're going to sell, go do it today. Lock in your price. You've got a month to make sure it's what you think it's going to be. Make sure you get all your stuff off of it. Make sure you've, you know, made the decision you want to make. Off it goes. Their UI is awesome. Their customer service is absolutely stellar. We get tons of reports from you folks about how just how great they are. Now, for most of the stuff that they buy, they wholesale it out. And that makes sense. That's a good business model and makes a lot of sense for them. But sometimes they get stuff in that's in really good condition. And they would hate to wholesale that out. So what they do is they'll sell that to you. So if you're looking for an unlocked iPhone, if you're looking for an older laptop, sometimes depends on what inventory they have available, but they do have some great stuff for sale too. And you can check it all out at gazelle.com. You get great prices. You know that this stuff's been through qualified hands, highly recommended. And we're very happy to have them as a sponsor. It's great. We're very fortunate here to have sponsors that, that not only are good people, but are companies that, that we can recommend. And Gazelle falls squarely in that group. So check them out, gazelle.com, and they would love to hear from you. And when you're checking out, they'll ask you where you heard about them. There's a little drop down there with Mac Geek Gab in it. Let them know. We would certainly appreciate that. So gazelle.com, check them out. And John, I believe that brings us to Simon, right?
Well, I just want to mention a few final things.
Oh, yeah,
I saw
yeah.
some of the discussion here in our chat room, which how can you get to our chat room? I'm going to tell you, Dave, you go to www.macgeekgab.com/stream and you can hear us and you can also type back and forth with us. But a few other things to bring up here. So number one, Dave, I decided not to put my photo library in the cloud. Now, this is a feature that Apple's been touting, and for some, it's maybe the way you want to do it. I don't.
Fair enough.
Mainly because I have 150 gigabytes of photos.
Right. Yeah, you need to buy quite a bit of cloud storage from Apple to do that. Yep.
So I am using, but I do still have, so I've got kind of a hybrid setup, but I am still using PhotoStream on my iOS device. And photos will consume your PhotoStream. So I can still see my PhotoStream photos in Aperture was able to do this as well. I can still see my PhotoStream in photos. The only thing that it seems that they don't provide anymore is that Aperture would also on a monthly basis create a project called, you know, like April 2015 photo stream, and then it would save that, and then when the next month came around, it would create another project, which are next month's photo stream. As far as I can see, photos does not do that anymore. Again, it maintains a photo stream project, but it looks like you would have to manually copy your photos from the photo stream before they disappear if you want to maintain them in your photos library. So, and that's all I have to say about that for now. But just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, no.
Because a lot of people are saying, hey, you know, either I got way too many photos, I got to think about this, or I'm just not going to do it. And I'll have to see if I ever am going to put all my photos on the cloud. I don't think I will.
Right, right. No, that makes good sense. Thanks for following up, man. So Simon wrote us, we've actually been going back and forth a little bit with Simon. Simon had a problem with his Apple TV where it would not reliably stream YouTube or Netflix videos or really anything. And so we sent him to our favorite fix, which is from Allison Sheridan over there at the NoSilicast podcast at her Podfeet blog. And we'll put a link in the show notes to the instructions on how to reset your Apple TV to fix this. that we've talked about it before. It involves holding down the menu button on the remote and the down arrow simultaneously for 6 seconds. And then when you release, it reboots. And for some reason, that magically fixes this problem that a normal reboot or even power cycle doesn't fix. And that was true for Simon. It got way better, but it wasn't perfect for him. He was still having cutouts maybe every fourth time instead of every time. And he said, I think there might be something going on with my internet connection dropping out. He said, ideally, I would like to get a connection log, maybe with error messages, so that I can beat up my ISP with the facts. And whether you're going to beat them up or not, it is super helpful when you call your ISP or use chat to talk to them if you have some specific details, because it obviously helps them troubleshoot as well. My advice is that, well, I mean, there's lots of things that we can do here, and we should talk about it, John, but the simplest way, and where I would actually start myself, is open up a terminal window on one of your Macs and just type ping and then a space and then www.apple.com and hit enter. What this will do, and it will never stop until you tell it to, and you tell it to stop by holding down control and hitting C, this will start sending what are called pings or echo requests to Apple server. And Apple servers seem to be able to take this just fine. So it sends a signal out, and Apple server sends a signal back. And it will just keep doing this over and over and over again once per second. What's handy is when you see an outage on your Mac or on your Apple TV, go look at your Mac and see if there's a gap in the ping logs. This will tell you if there is a widespread internet connection issue or if there's something specific, again, about your Apple TV that is not impacted by an internet connection issue. So that's a good place to start, and we'll definitely give you some, something to tell the folks at your ISP about what you're seeing. And maybe it is. Maybe it's a flaky Apple TV. Maybe you do have sporadic outages, and this will answer that question in a fairly easy way. There's other kind of, I guess, more elegant ways, but part of elegance is simplicity. And this, it doesn't get much simpler than this. You don't really get logs, but you do. I mean, you can look back in time and see when the outages were. So that's my first thought on that, John. You have any?
I want to enhance that thought and then add a few more. So one, you could certainly run ping on a continuous basis. So one thing you may want to do is you may want to change the frequency at which it happens. So the default is 1 second.
Yeah.
Now, how do you learn how to change the frequency at which a ping happens? Well, if you go in the terminal and you type man, which is a manual page, space, and then ping, it'll give you all the options. And I found the one here. Actually, there's a boatload of them. And the one that affects the frequency at which it happens is dash I.
Yep.
Space, and then wait. And this will be the number of seconds between sending each ping. So you may want to, if you're going to be running it on a constantly, you may want to not run it every second. I mean, you still can.
I would disagree. Well, I see what you're going at. You're limiting the amount Excuse of network. Me. You're limiting the amount of network traffic. But it, in this case, I actually like the 1 second interval because it gives you there's no gap, right? If you're doing it every 10 seconds, you might have a gap that your ping logs aren't going to show. And it's really not that much traffic going in and out for a ping. So, but you're right. You can change the interval. That's right. Yeah.
Okay. And then the other thing is if you want evidence, you could pipe it or redirect it to a text file. You won't see what's happening, but if you suspect that something terrible did happen, you could then look at the resulting file, right?
Yes.
So, for example, I just did ping space www.apple.com space greater than, which should send the output to a file. Is that right? It seemed to work. Yes, it did.
Yeah, okay. That should work. Yeah. You won't see it, though.
Right. Now, there may be a way. No, I don't off the top of my head know how to echo that both to the screen and redirect it. So maybe.
But you do bring up a good point, John. What you should do is go into your terminal, once you've got terminal open, go to the terminal menu at the top of the screen, go down to preferences, and then in here, go to profiles, and then go to whatever one is selected as your default. And I think it will automatically be selected, but it'll say default underneath it. And then go to the window tab in there. So that's terminal, preferences, profiles, default, window. I realize it's a bit of a convoluted path. At the bottom of that preference pane there is scroll back. And you can limit the number of rows in scroll back, or you can just limit to available memory. Set it to limit to available memory so that you'll have as far back in your scroll back of your terminal window as you possibly can, because if it's going to take a while, you might miss something. So, yeah, good stuff. I don't know if anybody in the chat room has any splendid ideas about this. I mean, there's certainly lots of network tools.
I got more.
Yeah, I'm sure. Go ahead.
I found one here that I haven't tried yet, Dave, but it seems pretty affordable. And it's called Peak Hour App. Have you ever heard of this?
Nope.
I was just surfing today. So Peak Hour App, beautiful network bandwidth monitoring and reporting for Mac OS X. Okay. Sounds good to me. And I think it's like under $10. And I think you can even get a free trial. Let's see. Try free for 10 days.
You know what? I have a better idea, John.
Yeah.
I use the terminal all the time, so it's the first thing I think of. But Apple does include a graphical version of the ability to send pings, and it's called Network Utility. And it's right there on your Mac in Applications Utilities. The third tab over is ping. And you'd put in www.apple.com, and then you'd, pardon me, you say send an unlimited number of pings and say ping. That's going to be much easier than dealing with the terminal, unless you're comfortable with the terminal, and then the terminal is very easy. It's not a scary place, but if you haven't been there before, maybe this tool is easier. And then you can copy the results out of here and save them to a file and all of that good stuff.
Yeah, but no, this app looks good, and it looks like they've been updating it for Yosemite and all that great stuff. And I also found reference. There are actually some services that for free will ping you from afar. And we'll keep track of the ping history. I found one called pingdom.com.
All right.
They have a free service. So if you know your public IP, which you should, I'm going to give this a try too. And it looks like it's free. So
sweet. Your router may or may not respond to public pings. So this may or may not work well for you. But it's worth a shot. And if you don't know your public IP, the Pingdom website might be able to figure it out for you. And if they can't, just type in IP into a Google search and it will tell you what your IP address is.
Yeah. Or what is my IP, I guess, is the guys have been doing this forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or iStat menus tells you, of course.
Of course. Yeah, that's right.
Another thing is you may want to make sure so the airport can yell at you if it detects that things are going wrong. And I just want to point people towards this. I don't know if it's enabled by default. So if you click on a base station and then you click on preferences, you're going to see an airport utility partway down a little checkbox, monitor airport base station for problems. And there's a little checkbox. And I think I've actually seen this. I think if you check that, then it'll enable something on the Mac called, I think it's like airport. I think it's in login items. But what will happen is and I've had this happen, is when my ISP goes down, I'll all of a sudden get an alert on my computer saying, yeah, something's wrong with the connection. Can you check it out, please? Typically, it can't find a DNS or something like that, but that's usually because your connection's broken. So that's another thing that you may be able to get a heads up on when your service is down. Yeah, airport base station agent. Will run in your login items. And I think that's part of the, it enables a conversation with your airport when it detects that something's not right.
Very cool. That's great, man. Uh-oh, I lost my Jot Mini. Okay, here it is. Okay. This is the best. I know I've talked about this before on the show, but I love this thing. The Jot Pro, I guess, and Jot Mini are the styluses that I use with my iPad to scratch off stuff on our show notes and all that. And I've been using all kinds of styluses for many years to do exactly this every week. And this is the best one. There's no comparison between these and everything else I've tried. So there you go. If you need a stylus, and most of us probably don't, but if you do, this is the one. All right. Let's see. Where are we here on time, John? I'm not in my normal environment, as you know. Let's take a look at what Pierre has to say, if I can get us there. And I think this is another one that's going to send us to the terminal, John. Pierre writes and says, as I buy time, yesterday I did something stupid. I installed some AT&T drivers for a Wi-Fi modem on my 2013 MacBook Pro Retina. After the required reboot, it does not get past the progress bar on my colored background. Yes, File Vault 2 is enabled, so immediately after the boot chime, I get to enter my password. Then the progress bar starts and goes halfway. I have tried and tried to no avail. Safe boot is, as far as I know, not an option. I can enter the mode where disk utility is available, but it finds nothing wrong. Please help. How do I once again get access to my Mac? Yeah, so what's happening here is your Mac is trying to load a driver that probably isn't built for your OS version, and then it dies. And that driver's in extensions, right? That's where we're gonna go here. So you, in this case, Pierre, you're pretty sure you know what the offender is, or at least where it came from. But if you didn't, you could hold down option. Command V on boot to see what the error is. Normally, when you boot OS X, you see the little progress bar cooking across there. That progress bar is there just to let you know that things are happening, but it doesn't tell you what's happening. Command V puts you in verbose mode. It eschews the gray screen with a progress bar for a far geekier display of all of the little things that are loading. It tells you what hard drives it's found. It tells you all the hardware. It tells you what drivers are loading. And you can see when it just stops, chances are the thing that loaded just before that is the offender. But in your case, Pierre, you know what it is. You probably don't need to do Command V, but it might be helpful if other methods to suss this out don't work. What I would say is hold down Command S. That's going to put you into single user mode. And that will give you a terminal command. So here we are yet again recommending the terminal. And this time, I don't have an easy GUI for you, but I do have an idea if you don't want to have to mess with the terminal. And dig around. You're going to have to change. First, you're going to have to follow the command to put the system into read-write mode. It is literally right above your cursor when you launch in single-user mode. So I don't need to send you a screenshot. I don't need to type it out. Apple does that for you. So you put your hard drive into read-write mode and then change to most likely the /library/extensions folder. And you do that by saying CD space, for CD for change directory, /library with a capital L, /extensions with an E, and the only space being between CD and the first slash. In there, LS will let you list the contents of that directory, and perhaps in there you will find the AT&T driver. It probably is something like com.att.com. You know, modem driver, yada, yada, yada. And RM is the command to remove that. You do need to tread carefully here because you don't want to remove the wrong thing, but you do want to remove the right thing. So that's where I would go with that. If you don't want to have to dig around in the terminal, I'm trying to think, John, booting into recovery mode isn't going to help because we don't have a finder in recovery mode. Isn't that right?
You get terminal, right?
You get terminal, right. So you're going to get terminal either way. That's right. But I don't think you get a finder in recovery mode. So you could boot from another Mac and maybe put yours into, and I'm looking at what model it is. You could put it into target disk mode, Thunderbolt target disk mode, which I believe... And I can't look anything up because otherwise then that's when you hear John's signal go all crackly. But because you can't run a web browser when you're using a USB audio device. Hey, there's mine going crackly too. You can't use a web browser when you use a USB audio device, which is what I'm using, in low latency mode. as we have found, and why we have moved back to FireWire in the main studio. But I believe that's Command T. Somebody in the chat room, John, or you will correct me there. But that'll put you into Thunderbolt target disk mode, and then you can plug a Thunderbolt cable between two Macs, and then you can mount your hard drive. You'll have to type in your hard drive's password because it's encrypted, but then you could dig around and just find that in the Finder and delete that file. And once you delete that, that should deal with it. The solution is relatively straightforward, but it's not the easiest thing to do because of the fact that you can't boot your Mac into a GUI with the Finder. But that should be able to solve it for you, Pierre. And for anybody else dealing with something like this, again, doing Command V on boot will show you what drivers are loading. So just the T key is what Furby's in the chat room is saying. So we don't need Command, but probably wouldn't hurt. But it sounds like the T key is your answer. Any more thoughts on that, John?
No, it surprises me because I was doing some work with another driver, and typically the OS has a list of old drivers that are going to cause hangups and crashes and stuff and excludes them. But I guess this one was missed that list. I'll have to go into detail. I think you remember it was this OS X smart extension driver, and I was having adventures with that not working and then working, and I was like, why isn't it working? And there's buried in the OS a huge list of drivers where it'll allow them to run if they don't have a signature and all of this stuff, but it also has an explicit list of drivers that it will just refuse to load because it knows that they wreak havoc.
Right.
You should send this one to Apple, actually.
Yeah, I forgot about that they have that we're not going to load this no matter what you try to do list. Yeah, and this, you know, as Will Run for Fun in the chat room says, this is an excellent argument for having a clone drive on your Mac. Not only do you have a backup, but you also have an easy way to boot that can then mount your existing drive and easily troubleshoot. So, yeah. In fact, I even travel with a clone drive now, John. I use this LaCie Rugged SSD, and I clone to it. Not all the time, maybe once a month from my laptop, but at least I have a clone that I know will boot my Mac while I'm traveling, which can, you know, I'm sure someday it'll save me. Probably one of those days where I'm at WWDC and I decide to install, you know, some alpha version of a new operating system and have it totally fail on me. But, you know, that's how I roll. Lynda.com, LYNDA.com/, whoa, that's me on the microphone, /MGG is where you can go to get 10 free days of Lynda's awesome, awesome training videos. And they are our second sponsor for this show. I've used some of these training videos. I've learned things. I actually learned some more shell scripting stuff. I took a bash shell scripting course with it. I also took an accounting course. I've been doing accounting for my own businesses for years, and figured it wouldn't hurt me to take a couple of hours and make sure that I'm not missing anything. And you know what? I was missing some things. Thankfully, nothing that, you know, put me on the wrong side of the law, but some things that probably cost me some money at times and now won't. It really helps, you know, just taking courses. We've recounted stories of listeners who have gone through and used nothing but Lynda as the source for changing their skill set adding to their skill sets so that they could change careers. And it's really fantastic. We've got listener Dave is in the web design business now. And all of that is because of Lynda. He spent the last year going through, and we've got other stories like that too. Lynda really does a fantastic job. Their video training courses, depending on the subject matter of the course, sometimes you're watching a teacher lecture, sometimes you're watching a computer screen, or like it with the accounting course, you're watching a computer screen that's in, you know, a spreadsheet and learning how those different things work, or looking at different charts and learning different constructs to apply. It's like being in the classroom, except because you don't have, you know, 10 or even 100 other students in the classroom, you can tell the teacher, stop. And when you stop, then you can dig around with stuff and play a little bit, which is super helpful really for anything, but especially if you're learning some programming thing and you're like, whoa, whoa, hang on, let me get that. Okay, great. Now let's move on. Really makes a difference. This is the future of education, folks. I find that these well-produced, I call them bite-sized. I mean, you know, some of them are several hours long, and that's okay. But you can consume them and learn in bite-sized chunks. You don't have to sit down for the full, whatever, 2-4 hours of a course. You can, every course is broken up into chapters, and you can even tell it to stop at the end of each chapter so that you don't feel overwhelmed. And that way you're really absorbing the information. You're not forced to go to some lecture at a time where maybe you're exhausted, maybe you're not feeling well, but by golly, I got to go to class because otherwise I'm going to miss what the professor has to say. No, you don't have to. You do this on your time when it's exactly the right time for you to learn. If you're listening to podcasts, you understand the benefit of learning or having entertainment at your fingertips when you want it, with a play button and a pause button. You can pause us here anytime you want. And the same is true for Linda. And especially if you're listening to this podcast, it's probably because you like to learn things. That's what John and I do here. So Linda is a perfect fit for you. You got to check it out. And the best part is you can check it out for free. You get full access to everything, over 2,000 videos in Linda's library. And these are 2,000 current videos. They expire stuff that's not current and relevant anymore. So go check it out, lynda.com/MGG. That's LYNDA.com/MGG. And that'll get you your 10 free days. And after that, it's $25. No, not $25 a video. No, not $25 a week. It's $25 a month. I don't know where you're going to learn stuff for less than that. Check it out. They're really top-notch videos that they put together there. And the point is, they will train you. I guarantee it. Tell us what you've learned. We'd love to hear about it. Tweet us at MacGeekGab or send us an email, feedback@MacGeekGab.com. Let us know. And of course, it's Linda, LYNDA.com/MGG. All right, John. I think it's time to go to Diane. Right? Uh-oh. I think I lost John. So I'm gonna pause here and we'll see if we get him back. And John is back. So John, I finished up the Linda spot. Thanks to Linda, LYNDA.com/MGG. And now we will head over and see what Diane has to say. This is certainly, I believe this episode will be successful. You folks at home, if you're hearing this, you know that it was. But it's certainly not going smoothly. But that, we kind of knew that going in. And of course, as more people wake up here and it's about 8:30 a.m. now, Pacific time, perhaps the internet connection in our, or in my hotel here at the Westgate is not behaving properly. Although the stream seems to be working. So who knows? Maybe it was your Skype connection that died, John. Who knows? Who knows? We'll never know. Let's see. Diane writes, I have a Western Digital 2 terabyte USB spinner drive, imaginatively named backup drive. My mouth's still not working. That's used as a backup for non-critical data. For the last couple of months, 2 or 3 times a day, I receive a notification that pops up and says disk not ejected properly. And then OS X warns me that I need to eject the backup drive before disconnecting it or turning it off. Of course, when I look, says Diane, the drive shows as connected in the Finder. I take the warning as notice that the drive is on death row and the appeals have about run out. The only pain point for me is when the drive inevitably dies and doesn't come back. Will be identifying all that non-contiguous, non-critical data, then moving that to a new drive. If you think the executioner is hooking up the chair, I'll be proactive. Otherwise, I'd prefer to let it coast for a bit. Well, that's quite the vision this morning, but we'll take it in stride. So something is going bad. It's either the drive itself, or the enclosure, or the cable, or I guess if we're going to be fair, the USB port on your Mac. Right? It's got to be one of those four things, at least one. It's possible there's more than one. If you had some kind of a power spike in there somewhere, it can fry more than one thing simultaneously. I would test with a new USB cable first, because that's the cheapest and easiest thing to try. If that doesn't do it, at that point, I'd probably replace the drive. You could try plugging it into a different USB port on your Mac, but my guess is that's not what's going on here. My guess is it's either the enclosure or the drive, but try a different USB cable. It's very easy to do that. Once you've determined that, you could try to crack open the enclosure and move the drive to another one and then go about troubleshooting with a new drive in the old enclosure or the old drive in a new enclosure. That may, or if you've got all that stuff around, then that's easy to do. If you don't have all that stuff around, it starts to become very costly and inefficient to troubleshoot that way, unless you want to accumulate some of that stuff for the sole purpose of troubleshooting now and in the future. But if the cable doesn't solve it and plugging it into a different port on your Mac doesn't solve it, I'd say replace the drive and get the data over there and off of that as quickly as possible. Thoughts, John?
No, you covered it. This is the message that you see if you yank a drive without ejecting it. So, right. Yeah, connectivity or power issue would also be my best guess.
That's true. It could be a power issue with the enclosure, too. That's right. Yep. All right. Let's see. We have two follow-ups on the guy last week that had, I think it was last week, but we talked about a listener that had a slow browser, the 10-second delay in Safari. And so we have two things to follow up with, and maybe one more in the chat room. I've got to look here. But Graham wrote in and said, a delay on the web browser loading may be caused by third-party software getting in the way, either antivirus or adware that is redirecting requests. Try Adware Medic to check for adware. And yeah, somebody was saying that in the chat room last week. I missed it in the flow of things. So that's definitely one place to check. John, you have another one from the I think from the listener himself or maybe from someone
yes.
else.
Yes.
Okay.
So Anthony replied and said he thinks he found it, which is awesome. So via the Twitters, he sent a message to Mac Geekab, and he said he used my recommendation of using Private Eye, which is a utility that will monitor your incoming and outgoing network connections. And he found something in the middle of, he didn't send a screenshot, but he found something in the middle of his Safari conversation called BZ Transmit. What's that, you ask? Well, if you do a little surfing, you can find that that is the Backblaze process. Backblaze being some backup software that can potentially take up network bandwidth or network sockets or network connections. So he said, I paused the Backblaze backup. Safari sped up dramatically, restarted the backup. Safari slowed down again. Now, the thing is, so I directed him. So there is actually a way to tweak Backblaze. So I'm not going to shake my fist at them quite yet, Dave.
Okay.
But it is possible to tweak Backblaze settings. And I found a link to one of their help articles. And they basically say, yeah, you can change the performance of our solution. And I guess you can set it where, it has a little checkbox, automatically throttle, or I guess you can manually throttle it. And that's all I'm going to offer, that they have a way for you to limit the bandwidth that it uses. So maybe it's in a mode right now where it's just sucking down all your bandwidth and anything else that wants to get on the network is going to run slow as well. And Safari is the one that you notice it the most. You probably won't notice it with email and stuff like that, right?
No, yeah, not as much. That's right. Yeah, because it's not as much of a real-time kind of thing. I will point out one other thing. We had a listener write in, and I guess I didn't log it here, but when you see that, and I know Anthony's problem is all set, but when you see that 10-second delay in any sort of network activity, most commonly, I would even say, and we didn't think about this last week, is that you have OS X searching for a proxy server for that connection. You can check your proxy settings, and you probably, unless you know that you need a proxy server being instead of you talking directly to the web server or email server or whatever it is that you're going to talk to, you talk to an intermediary that then negotiates the transaction on your behalf. So if you want to see what your proxy settings are, you can dig in the network system preference pane. But honestly, the easiest way to get there is to go to Safari, Preferences, Advanced, and click on the Change Settings button next to Proxies. And out here, nothing should be checked unless you know specifically that something should be checked. And then, of course, it should be. But if you had auto proxy discovery or automatic proxy configuration checked, that can easily be the cause or the source of a 10-second lag when Safari is going to do something. It's waiting. It's trying to find the proxy. It gives up, and then it negotiates the transaction directly. So just bear that in mind if you see that too. It's just another place to check. So.
Good, of course, good, last thing.
Good stuff.
It didn't occur to me is try a different browser.
Yeah, we mentioned that last week. Yeah.
Oh, did we? Okay.
We did. Yeah.
Yeah, because I've had some pages that don't work in Safari, but they work great in Firefox or Chrome. I think would be your three major contenders these days.
I know Firefox has its own proxy settings. I can't remember if Chrome does or not, or if it just inherits the system-wide settings, but I know with Firefox you can definitely tell it, hey, you know, go and use this proxy if you want. So, all right, John. Well, I feel like there's one thing I want to mention, but otherwise, I kind of feel like we should hedge our bets here and not push the bandwidth gods too much further. But I do want to talk about back, I believe at least two shows ago, John, we discussed AFP, Apple File Protocol, and SMB, which is system. Somebody will tell me what that is. System messaging blocks?
Server message block?
Something like that. So AFP is Apple's protocol for sharing files, and it's their older one, or it's the one they developed years and years ago. And then SMB was what was most common on Windows, and then SMB2 is the replacement of that. And I think there's even SMB3 floating out there. But as of Mavericks, when you're connecting two Macs together, they will use SMB2 as long as both of them support it, because it's a more efficient protocol than AFP. AFP is in networking circles referred to as a very chatty protocol. So SMB tends to be more efficient, and we talked about this and talked about it in terms of Synology, because we realized that you didn't have SMB enabled on your Synology, and so you weren't connecting that way. And we got a lot of we had a lot of discussion with many of you on Twitter, via email, everywhere about this. And there's a couple of things. We need to walk back some of this a little bit. Yes, SMB is better when both support it in most cases. But for Time Machine, you almost certainly don't want to be using SMB. You want to use AFP. There's a lot, as we mentioned earlier in the show, there's a lot of things that Time Machine does that are very Apple-specific, and you want it to be using as much Apple stuff. Dave, what?
The thing is, Dave, I will argue that you can't do Time Machine to an SMB volume.
I believe that's true.
I tried.
Yeah,
I tried really hard. There are articles that tell you how to get into in the terminal,
right,
to try to point to. I think there is a way to do it if you replace some of the guts of the OS, but I would strongly discourage you from doing this. And the thing is, even if you go into Time Machine and you look at the disks that are available for Time Machine, if you hover over them, you're going to see AFP:// Time Machine really, really, really wants to use AFP.
And it
so I would not force the issue.
I'm 100% with you. And even on your Synology, if you've got SMB enabled on your NAS, and for whatever reason your Mac and your Synology decide to negotiate AFP, it's not the worst thing in the world. I realized that mine from most of my Macs is doing AFP, and I can completely saturate my gigabit Ethernet pipe with my, you know, 3-year-old Synology unit, transferring data between it and my Mac. So, yes, with smaller files, it's potentially a little less efficient because there's a lot more data going back and forth. But your Synology is on your local network. You know, latency is not a huge issue. So I guess what I want to say is don't overly sweat it. If you like to have fun with network stuff, absolutely dig in. But if you don't care and you simply were following our advice, which is not a bad thing in most cases, we're going to walk that back a little bit and say don't sweat it. Just let it do what it's doing unless you're having a problem. And I think that covers it. Right, John?
Pretty much. I'm not, I think I turned it on and I, yeah, the computer, the client, OS 10 client tends to make the right choice as far as a network connection.
Right.
So
right.
Let it do its job.
Yeah. Let it do its job. Yeah. It knows what it's doing.
I mean, I did try a little bit. I mean, you can go in the, you know, connect to server dialog and you can force the protocol. You can say AFP colon or SMB colon. Yeah. And yeah, if you want to try that and it works, then, you know, good for you.
Right. Right. Hang on. I've got this delay now. Yeah. Do anything while you have USB audio running and, you know, could be a real disaster. It's fun stuff.
You should go analog, man.
Well, that's what I do for the most part back in the studio. And it works. It actually works quite well. So,
but you know what you could do, Dave? If you have problems with your audio or your video or your computer or your Mac or your SMB or your AFPs, you know what you can do?
What's that?
You can send an email to feedback@macgeekgab.com and they'll help you.
Did you say feedback@macgeekgab.com? That's what I said earlier in the show.
I'm pretty sure I said feedback@macgeekgab.com.
I'm sure you did. I have no doubt about it. Premium@macgeekgab.com is the address that all of you that are premium supporters and subscribers can send your email into. And we do prioritize those and check them out ahead of time. We do try to get to everything, and most weeks we succeed. In fact, I would say probably 51 and a half weeks out of the year we succeed. But the premium stuff definitely gets the nod. If you want to learn more about premium, visit MacGeekGab.com, and you can check it all out right there, too. Those of you that are premium listeners that have qualified for that gift recently, some of you have started receiving them. They shipped out. They began shipping last week. I believe the last of them will ship out this week. So I hope you enjoy. I hope they all make it safely. But if they don't, let us know. We'll take care of you, and it'll be good. This one's a special one. They're all special, but
I got mine.
This one's a special one. You did awesome. I haven't gotten mine yet.
Surprised. It's like two or three towns over from me, the place that where they sent it out from.
That's awesome.
Yeah. That's nice. Local outfit, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, definitely. Definitely, definitely. All right. So that's how you email us. 206-666-GEEK is the number to call, and John Geek is
4335.
And you can check us out this week on Facebook, facebook.com. Actually, go to macgeekgab.com/Facebook. That will direct you to the right place for the Facebook group. It gets a little crazy trying to navigate Facebook's waters. So macgeekgab.com/Facebook is the place to go. And you can follow me this week on Twitter @DaveHamilton. If you want to see anything I might be posting from NAB, you can follow John on Twitter @JohnFBraun to see anything he might be posting from home. And, of course, Matt Geekab on Twitter is Matt Geekab. Check it all out. Anything else to add before we start wrapping this one up, John?
No, I think we're good.
Okay.
We should wrap it up because I'm about to, I think, have a sneezing fit or a disgusting mucus event. So.
All right. I'm going with Don McAllister and Chuck Joyner, and we're going to go try on Apple Watches at the Caesars Forum shops here.
So. Oh, sweet.
Yeah. All right. Even though I already ordered mine. I had to hedge my bets because I wanted to get it on the 24th. So I ordered the black sport model, but I'm going to go try some on and just to see what the experience is like. Should be fun. If you are at all interested in an Apple Watch, I've seen that appointments are quite plentiful. My family made appointments yesterday after I left for the airport and was able to try them on, I think, before I even got to the airport. So there's quite a bit of availability where we have checked. So check it out. And let us know what you think. I'm curious. I'm really interested to see what happens with this watch. I'm as you know, I'm not blindly sold on it. So, but I wasn't blindly sold on the iPad, and good luck taking that away from me. All right. Let's see. We want to, of course, thank Michael Johnston from the iOS Show podcast for converting this with all the chapters and adding all the links and all of that good stuff. Also want to thank you, Michael. Also want to thank the folks at CacheFly, CacheFly.com, for all the bandwidth that it takes to get the show from us to you. And without our sponsors, we would not be able to do as much as we do. They and you are the reason that we get to keep doing what we do here for you each and every week. And we're happy to do it. So I want to thank our sponsors, Linda at lynda.com/mgg, Gazelle, of course, at gazelle.com, Smile at smilesoftware.com, iMazing at iMazing.com, and MGG gets you 20% off there. Squarespace.com, of course, MGG gets you 10% off there. And it wouldn't be the same if I didn't say thank you to all of you, because, as I said, we really can't do this without all of you. And those of you that send in questions, those of you that interact with us, and then those of you that are able to support us on the premium side, we really, really appreciate all of it. Thank you so much. Thanks, John. Thanks for bearing with me this morning with all the bandwidth. Thanks for everybody in the chat room, macgeekup.com/stream. John, have a fantastic week, my friend. I believe our next show is Sunday morning, but we'll check on that. And in the
end, Dave, you're in Vegas.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think when you're in Vegas, there's something you really, really need to keep in mind, right?
What's that, John? I'm not sure what you're getting at here.
Dave, don't get caught.
Made up.